Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Well, good evening once again. Day 7 of the Biden administration. This was the day they went big on vaccines. Today, the president ordered 200 million more doses, a surge in vaccines, a surge to the states, all part of what he described as a wartime undertaking.
We will increase overall weekly vaccination distributions to states, tribes, and territories from 8.6 million doses to a minimum of 10 million doses. Starting next week, that's an increase of 1.4 million doses per week. This is going to allow millions of more Americans to get vaccinated sooner than previously anticipated.
The president also had a few things to say about the Trump administration's vaccine distribution program.
We have recently discovered in the final days of the transition, and it wasn't until the final days we got the kind of cooperation we needed, that once we arrived, the vaccine program is in worse shape than we anticipated or expected.
Again, the headline is this. The president says he's directed his team to buy an additional 200 million doses. That would be enough to vaccinate most Americans by the end of this coming summer. There's much more on the vaccine effort just ahead in this broadcast. As Biden tries to get a handle on the uncontrolled pandemic, he is also moving forward with erasing more signs of the Trump era because elections have consequences. NBC News reporting the Trump zero tolerance policy at the border, which led to the separation of over 3,000 migrant families, has been rescinded. Earlier today, the president signed four executive actions aimed at increasing racial equity across our country with a goal toward addressing systemic racism. On Capitol Hill, senators were sworn in today for Donald Trump's second impeachment trial, slated to begin the week of February 8. Not long after that, Kentucky Republican Rand Paul forced a vote on whether the trial itself is unconstitutional because Trump is no longer in office.
This proceeding, which would try a private citizen and not a president, a vice president, or civil officer, violates the Constitution and is not in order.
The history and precedent is clear. The Senate has the power to try former officials.
We have a distinguished law professor standing by to talk about this, but many legal experts, indeed, we should point out, say the trial is completely constitutional. In fact, the Senate has tried former office holders before in its history. 17 Republicans would have to cross over and join with all 50 Democrats in the Senate to convict the former president. This afternoon, 55 senators agree the trial does not violate the Constitution. Only five Republican senators, Murkowski, Romney, Sass, Toomey, Collins, agreed. That means 45 elected Republicans, including Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, in essence voted against trying Donald Trump.
The vote we took today is essentially a mirror of the vote we will take at the very end. 45 Republicans don't even think the procedure, don't even think that the trial is constitutional. And so that shows you they are not going to win.
So that's Rand Paul. Tonight, Axios is reporting Senators Tim Kaine and Susan Collins are privately pitching their colleagues on their own bipartisan resolution to censure the former president. Democrats also had a scare this evening when Pat Leahy, Senator of Vermont, who will preside over the trial, was briefly hospitalized after feeling ill when he got back to his office from the Senate chamber. Leahy is 80 years old, third in line to the presidency as president pro tem of the Senate. His spokesperson says he's now home, looks forward to getting back to work as early as tomorrow. As for the criminal investigation and the Capitol riot that started it all, the FBI has said it has now opened 400 cases. So far, 150 people have been charged. At a closed-door briefing with House members today, the acting head of the Capitol Hill Police apologized for security failures. And in her prepared remarks, she said this, quote, "We knew that militia groups and white supremacist organizations would be attending. We also knew that some of these participants were intending to bring firearms and other weapons. We knew that there was a strong potential for violence and that Congress was the target." Today, the Washington Post broke the news that, quote, "The commander of the D.C. National Guard said the Pentagon restricted his authority ahead of the riot, requiring higher level sign-off to respond that cost time as the events that day spiraled out of control." There are other headlines out of Washington tonight. The Senate today confirmed Tony Blinken, Secretary of State. He'll have the task of carrying out Biden's commitment to reverse the Trump America First doctrine. Also today, Joe Biden had his first phone call as president with Vladimir Putin. White House says Biden pressed the Russian leader on several issues, including the recent sweeping computer hack, arms control, reports of those Russian bounties on U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Biden also raised concerns about the poisoning and arrest of that opposition leader, Alexei Navalny, as well as the treatment of supporters who've been detained for protesting his incarceration. In short, it was the kind of phone call Putin hasn't had with an American president in over 4 years now. This afternoon, a Fox News reporter tried to get Biden to reveal more details about the call.
Mr. President, what did you talk to Vladimir Putin about?
You. He sends a guest.
With that, let's bring in our leadoff guests on this Tuesday night. Philip Rucker, Pulitzer Prize-winning senior Washington correspondent for The Washington Post. Professor Melissa Murray, NYU law professor who clerked for Sonia Sotomayor when she sat on the U.S. Court of Appeals. And Michael McFaul, our former U.S. ambassador to Russia, dating back to the last time things were normal. His book is titled From Cold War to Hot Peace, An American Ambassador in Putin's Russia. Well, good evening and welcome to you all. Phil, I'd like to start on your beat. 45 Republicans voted to make it go away today. What do you think we're really looking at? Are there off ramps? Will censure work? Will a straight up and down vote preventing the former president from holding office in the future work? Is there a chance at a plea deal, in other words? Is there kind of an ugly common ground that both parties would accept?
You know, Brian, I think any and all of those options may be on the table, and perhaps more Republicans would be willing to support the censure vote. But what was clear today is that this remains Donald Trump's Republican Party. He may be canceled on social media, silenced on Twitter, effectively in exile down in Palm Beach at Mar-a-Lago, but he still controls the elected Republicans in the Congress, most of them, as if he were their puppeteer. And I think that's why you saw 45 of those senators who just less than 3 weeks ago endured an insurrection on their own place of work. They were under attack from these insurrectionists at the Capitol, and yet they do not fault the president for it. They're trying to give him a pass, and they're opposing this impeachment trial, even as it is going to be proceeding with the trial commencing here in the next couple of weeks and the ultimate vote on the floor.
Hey, Professor, at the end of the broadcast tonight, we're going to get to the crowd of mostly Republicans who know better. By dint of brains or education or life experience, they know better than the way they're voting. Of those 45 Republicans who voted today to kind of let this go, in effect, so many of them know better. And I know I've asked you this on this broadcast before, but for all the people who heard about the vote today, heard about Rand Paul's point, is it or is it not constitutional to try for impeachment in the Senate a person who is no longer in office?
Well, again, to be clear, this is not a substantive disagreement with the underlying charge in the article of impeachment. It's a procedural disagreement. And basically, the procedural disagreement is that you cannot impeach someone who is no longer president. As I've said before on the show, and many other constitutional law scholars agree, it seems as a matter of constitutional design that the framers, who were so intent on securing the country from the threat of tyranny from a president or Congress, They would never have allowed impeachment to be avoided or any accountability to be avoided simply because a president had completed his term of office. It would make the president entirely above the law. So for most constitutional scholars, this just doesn't make much sense at all.
As a practical matter, Professor, future presidents would know to leave all the dirty and bad stuff till the last week or two of their presidency because there would be no consequences, correct?
That's exactly the point. And more to the point, it would make the impeachment clause to be basically superfluous. The impeachment clause not only provides for removing a president upon conviction, it also allows for the disqualification of a president from holding future office, or any public officer for that matter. So to say that you could not impeach a former president or any former public officer means that that disqualification provision is absolutely surplusage, which again, doesn't make sense either.
Ambassador McFaul, Joe Biden is the fifth American president that Vladimir Putin has dealt with. Here now, you'll indulge us just a remembrance of what the fourth American president was like.
I think I'd get along very well with Putin.
I got to know him very well because we were both on 60 Minutes. We were stablemates.
Putin did call me a genius, and he said, I'm the future of the Republican Party.
If he says great things about me, I'm going to say great things about him.
If we have a good relationship with Russia, believe me, that's a good thing.
I believe that he feels that he and Russia did not meddle in the election.
He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be.
President Putin, did you want President Trump to win the election? And did you direct any of your officials to help him do that?
Yes, I did.
It would be great to get along with Russia. And we will get along with Russia.
Because we get along. I like Putin. He likes me. You know, we get along.
So, Ambassador, what's it going to be like for Vladimir Putin to get renormalized without a supplicant American president to deal with?
Well, it's going to be very different. President Biden is not going to try to befriend President Putin, but he's also going to get things, probably more things done with President Putin than President Trump did, including extending the New START treaty, which they agreed to do for 5 years. Trump was in power for 4 years and never got anything done, as far as I can remember, that were in America's national interest. But you also saw in the readout today, Brian, by the way, a brilliant readout, having written some of them and helped to write some of them. And by the way, isn't that kind of new? In and of itself, it's new. We didn't used to get this for the last 4 years. But in one paragraph, they captured what Biden wants to do with Russia, which is to engage when it's in America's interest. That's the New START treaty, to contain his belligerent behavior, as you reported earlier, the words like solar winds and Ukraine and meddling never occurred in these phone calls, and to talk about human rights, as he did with Alexei Navalny. That, in a nutshell, is the new Biden strategy vis-a-vis Russia.
Just for members of our audience who may not know what a readout is, and you experienced this in your job and working in the White House, when these two leaders talk, on both sides, there are note takers, there are people listening on a dead key, there are real-time interpreters on both ends of the conversation, and traditionally a document is produced because so much is at stake between two superpowers, telling the media what transpired. Trump famously took the notes from a note taker. We famously don't know what was discussed between both of these guys during most of their face-to-face conversations. And as you point out so correctly, Donald Trump was a completely different character. Joe Biden doesn't want to be Putin's friend. There's no swooning there.
Right. Well, two things. First of all, on the job, my first moment of work at the White House was President Obama's first call to President Medvedev back in 2009. And what you just described is exactly right. You're in the room, you're listening, and then you do a readout of the call. Now, let's be honest. We don't know exactly what they talked about. We know what the White House wants us to think that they talked about. But that's the purpose of the readout, too, is to define your policy. And that's why I thought it was such a great statement of the policy. Implementing it, by the way, Brian, is going to be a lot harder. We'll get to that in the future. But as a start, that's the right thing. But the second piece is really vitally important. President Biden has no expectations whatsoever of being President Putin's friend, whereas the last president, President Trump, defined as his only objective in U.S.-Russian relations, is trying to be Putin's friend. And I don't even think he succeeded at that small task, by the way, but most certainly he got the means and the objectives mixed up. President Biden understands the difference between objectives and the means.
And Phil Rucker, this is how this circles back to you. It's unfair, even given your new title, to ask you after 7 days about the governing style of the new president, but I just did anyway.
Yeah, Brian, Ambassador McFaul described it well in just a different way they handle these phone calls. There's a real normalcy here with the Biden administration, and it's a little bit jarring, frankly, to watch, having chronicled 4 years of the Trump administration, where decisions are made by impulse and policies are announced on the fly. And there's been just a methodical and deliberate day-by-day rollout of policy agenda items in this administration. Today was all about the coronavirus vaccine and getting those additional doses out there and trying to instill confidence in the American people that more vaccines will be available in more places, in more communities, to more people in the days and weeks to come. But there have been other things too, a whole series of economic executive orders, some climate issues that are going to be coming up. And it's a very, it might seem boring to people who are looking for entertainment from their government, but it's entirely normal. And it's all built on trying to instill confidence in the American people that these folks know what they're doing and that they have a plan and that they're taking charge from day one.
I know a whole lot of people who are on board for boring. Professor, I'd like to give you the last word. I am guessing you thought it was a good start to hear an American president today talk the way humans talk about the death of George Floyd. I am guessing you believe today's executive actions, the mere mention of combating systemic racism, was a good start. I'm also wondering what the Biden administration should do next, in your view, on that front.
Well, it was a good start, especially after the last 4 years where we've seen very little progress on many of these issues. One of the things that was mentioned throughout the day, though, was in that executive order prohibiting the use of private prisons. There wasn't much mention of immigration detention centers, which has been a huge area of growth for private prison management. And that is something the administration will have to take on. But it's also worth remembering that President Biden and his executive orders are not the only actors here. Just this morning, we had a court in the Southern District of Texas enjoin one of these executive orders that issued a 100-day stay on immigration deportation. So there are other actors here and other ways that other branches can prevent this administration from advancing its domestic agenda.
Three terrific guests to start us off on a Tuesday night. Phil Rucker, Professor Melissa Murray, Ambassador Mike McFaul. Our sincere thanks for coming on and helping us out. Coming up for us, the tricky logistics, getting shots in arms of all Americans by mid to late summer, perhaps. And are these new virus strains going to outsmart the shots? And later, 20 days ago, an insurrection threatened their lives. Today, most Republican senators seem to be saying, yep, no big. We'll get reaction from Steve Schmidt and Jason Johnson as the 11th hour Tuesday edition is just getting underway.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
We didn't get into this mess overnight. And it's going to take months for us to turn things around. But let me be equally clear. We're going to get through this.
President says states will now be getting up to a 3-week heads up on designated vaccine supplies. They've been flying blind the entire way thus far. Way more vaccine doses are on the way, but the numbers are numbing. 1 in 13 Americans have contracted the virus. Roughly 1% of the U.S. population has been vaccinated. And now, just as more contagious mutations are spreading, word arrived today, the number of confirmed cases worldwide has now topped 100 million. Roll that around for a minute. And in this country, January has already become the deadliest month of this pandemic. We thought that distinction might go to last March. With us tonight, once again, Dr. Michael Osterholm, professor, director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, University of Minnesota, also happens to be a member of the president's COVID-19 advisory board. Doc, let me see if I have this right. I am guessing that you are so very happy at the return of competence and diligence and rigor and expertise at this pursuit. On the other hand, I need you to tell our viewers what we're heading into, and I need you to reassure us that these new strains aren't going to be smart enough to render our existing vaccine formulas inert.
Well, first of all, thank you, Brian, for having me tonight. And let me just say, it's the difference between night and day. We now have planning going on. We have a plan. We have transparency. People can understand what's happening. And you're going to see the vaccine situation only get better over time. I want to remind people that it doesn't mean that it's going to be taken care of overnight. It still is going to take us months to make all the vaccine that we need. But in regard to the other issue that you raised about these variants, these mutated viruses, what that means, there really are two areas that we are concerned about. One is, do they transmit more, cause more serious illness? And the second area, could they somehow defeat the immune response that we have to vaccine or to natural disease? In the first category, I'm very concerned about that. You know, I've called balls and strikes with you for the last year on this issue. And I'm telling you, the worst months of the pandemic could easily be ahead of us. You know, we're down to 150,000 cases a day. I say down. Remember when 70,000 cases were a lot? And if these new variants take off here in the United States, like they have in Europe, we are going to see by far the worst days over the course of the next 6 to 14 weeks. Vaccine will help, but even during that time, we can't vaccinate more than 12% of our nation's population. As far as concern about the vaccines and the variants, I'm not nearly as concerned about that. There is some hint that there may be some reduced activity with our immune response, but I think at this point, it's too early to say that. I think the vaccines are still going to work. The problem we're going to have is the virus, this new variant, is going to cause so much illness in the short term.
President Biden today held up his mask and said, in the short term, it's masks and not vaccines that are going to save us. It's masks and not vaccines that are going to be the most direct way to save lives. The projection is we can save 50,000 souls if we just wear a mask between now and the end of the month of February. Do you concur?
I do, in the sense that, you know, it depends on what kind of mask you're wearing. You know, we know that we need this higher level of protection. You know, the ideal is these N95 respirators. We know that medical masks can play some role. Face cloth coverings can play some role also. But one of the challenges we have with these new viruses is they're much more highly infectious. So when you walk into a store today, a grocery store, a hardware store, where you've walked in a number of times in the past months with your mask on, today, that virus level, because somebody's standing in there putting out much more virus, may actually cause you to get infected today when it didn't infect you a month ago or 4 months ago. So we have to remind people that distancing is still by far the very best thing. That's what will save the most lives. But again, wear your mask and get vaccinated when you can. Not only will it save your life potentially, but the life of those you love.
chilling to hear, especially from such an expert, but we need to hear it. It's terrific to have you on. Thank you for always being so free with your time and taking our questions. Michael Osterholm from the Twin Cities tonight. Just ahead for us, one of our next guests calls the upcoming impeachment trial a question of accountability and justice. Remember the kinds of things Republicans used to talk about in the well of the Senate. That when we come back.
They don't have the votes to convict. We had 45 people, 45 Republican senators say that the whole charade is unconstitutional. So what does that mean? It means that impeachment, the trial, is dead on arrival. There will be a show, there will be a parade of partisanship, but the Democrats really will not be able to win.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rand Paul, with 45 Senate Republicans voting to dismiss Donald Trump's impeachment trial, the New York Times reports it this way tonight, and we quote, "The overwhelming level of Republican support exceeded what almost anyone was expecting." Well, back with us again this evening is Jason Johnson, campaign veteran, journalist, contributor to The Griot, professor of politics at Morgan State University, and Steve Schmidt, longtime political strategist who led John McCain's 08 campaign, has since left the party. He's among the founders of the Lincoln Project, which set out to defeat Trump and Trumpism. And Steve, you are where I am going to start. Donald Trump has vanished. He's vanished from sight. He has vanished from Twitter. Out of sight, out of mind in all but MAGA nation. Why then does he only seem to live on in the minds and hearts of the sniveling cowards?
Well, good evening, Brian. Look, let me just start with Rand Paul's comments. And this is somebody who ran talking about his fidelity to the Constitution. His comments are a travesty there. Even in the height of Jim Crow in the South, when there was violence done against Black Americans, occasionally the perpetrators, white people, would be brought before a jury and a trial would take place. More often than not, in most instances, that trial acquitted those white people, regardless of the preponderance of their guilt. It didn't mean just because you knew in advance that they would be acquitted that there shouldn't be a trial, because one day there was accountability, there was justice. It's not about winning. It's about justice. It's a trial. We all saw the president of the United States incite a mob of white supremacists, white nationalists, extremist militia, fascist Proud Boys. He incited them to violence. They attacked the Capitol. The Capitol fell. The American flag was torn down. The MAGA flag was raised in its place. The floor of the United States Senate, the floor of the House of Representatives were desecrated. This mob was there to kill the vice president and the Speaker of the House. They didn't succeed, but they killed five people, including bludgeoning a police officer to death. There must be accountability for an attack against the people of the United States, an attack against the people's government, the government of the people, by the people, for the people. And so it doesn't matter. We'll see the complicity, the cowardice. We'll see the subordination of their oath of office to the Constitution as they once again assert their loyalty to Donald Trump. And the American people will once again get to take their measure. It is a good thing that Donald Trump has been removed from power, but he leaves behind a real deal autocratic movement in this country. And that movement is sustained in part by the cynicism of the elected elites of the Republican Party, men like Kevin McCarthy and Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley and men like Rand Paul. And this is why you're seeing an action by corporate America that's saying the 147 members of Congress that rose in an action that would have disenfranchised, nullified, eradicated the voice of millions of Americans on the basis of their skin color. That vote, after the violent insurrection was a crossing of the Rubicon. And those companies are saying no more donations. And I think in the end, you'll see $100 million to $200 million come out of the political committees that support these members. We're at a time of great turbulence in the politics of the country. As the president tries to deal with this crisis, there must be accountability. There must be justice, not just for the incited who stormed the Capitol and did the violence, but for the inciters, starting with the president of the United States, but also Senators Hawley, Senator Cruz, and majority leader, former majority leader, now minority leader, McCarthy in the House of Representatives.
Professor Johnson, even though we are friends, I'm going to ask you, since his name was invoked, to watch this with us. As you do, remember, this is a product of Princeton and Harvard Law School. Here is Ted Cruz tonight on Hannity.
This is driven really by the partisan rage and the partisan anger the Democrats feel. They hate Donald J. Trump, and they're engaging in an act that I think is petty. I think it is retribution. I think it is vindictive, and I think it's a waste of time. And so to coin a phrase, I think it's time to move on. It's time to move on and focus on helping people get back to work, helping people beat this global pandemic, bringing America back to where we should be, not these partisan games the Democrats are playing.
So, Jason, that's how a guy whose desk was looted talks about this. It's the anger somehow of the Democrats. It's petty. My question to you is, what is the chance that it's something less than an impeachment trial, that there is some kind of off-ramp plea bargain? Where is this thing headed?
It's going nowhere, Brian. And the reason is because of disingenuous pablum from people like Ted Cruz, who's a coward, who still has this sort of ridiculous fantasy that one day he's going to catch all the magic rings of the MAGA universe and put them on his fingers and somehow become president in 2024. That's what all of this is about. They don't want to work with the Democrats. They don't want to hold Donald Trump accountable because they somehow think that those benefits will accrue to them one day. And this is part of why I in particular, I think what Ted Cruz did is so disgusting. Not only was he one of the instigators of this violence, not only is he somebody intelligent enough to know that this is actually constitutional, but Ted Cruz was one of the people who couldn't let Benghazi go like a rabid dog. He gnawed on that bone for years, screaming and yelling about Benghazi. And yet when it comes to an insurrection that killed five people, an insurrection that we're still investigating and finding out more and more that it's very likely the members of his own party helped provide information and facilitate this attack, suddenly 2 weeks is enough time to move past it. That's what's so disturbing about this. So the idea that you've got Collins and Tim Kaine saying, oh, maybe we'll do censure, or the idea that, hey, maybe we can just have a vote on whether or not Donald Trump can ever run again. None of the Republicans are going to engage in that behavior because at their core, they still want this revolution to occur. And those who don't want it to occur somehow think that they're going to be able to run for president in 2024 off the face of five dead people and undermining this entire country.
We've agreed to a pause on the revolution. Both of these gentlemen have agreed to stay with us so I can fit in a break. When we come back, so many Republican senators without the conviction to convict. Back with us to join our conversation, Jason Johnson, Steve Schmidt. Jason, I have one for you. This is a tweet by our friend Andrew Desiderio over at Politico. He says, this flew under the radar today, but McConnell said he hasn't spoken with Trump since December 15th, the day after the Electoral College certified the election results and the day McConnell began calling Biden the president-elect. Jason, notwithstanding McConnell's, let's call it a test vote today, what is the chance the old campaigner, the editor-in-chief of American Nihilist magazine, Mitch McConnell, would vote to convict at this point?
It's next to nil. And I don't know why anyone who observed Mitch McConnell would be surprised that he and Donald Trump didn't talk. They were a very Brady Belichick relationship. Look, we're here just to win wings. We're here just to get judges. We're actually not friends, right? And now they're going to go off and try and do whatever their separate careers are going to be. Mitch McConnell will say all the nice things. He'll say that Donald Trump provoked things but didn't incite things. But under no circumstances is he even remotely interested in trying to hold President Trump accountable. That is not in his ideology, and that's not what he's going to ask anybody in his caucus to do. But what I think is important also to remember is by not having any communication with the president, it also indicates something that I think everybody needs to understand about the Republican Party. They weren't behaving this way just because of Donald Trump. It's like the, you know, Dumbo and the feather, right? The feather wasn't making Dumbo fly. It was always within him. The Republicans were always a white nationalist party. That's what they decided that they were going to sell out to. So Donald Trump being gone or not communicating with McConnell doesn't mean they're not going to keep the same agenda. It just means they're not going to have somebody tweeting to a million bots every week to justify what they're doing.
I see your Brady mention, and I'll raise you one, Patrick Mahomes. Hey, Steve, this would have been the morning Rob Portman, newly fortified with the truth serum of retirement, conjured up the courage. But no, he maintains his 90% voting record. He voted on Trump's side today. Do you think we in the news media and chattering class were giving members of the Senate too much credit for how quickly they might migrate away from Donald Trump? Because this is a whole new kind of criminal cognitive dissonance, Steve. Some of these guys are going to sit here at this trial at desks that were looted and defiled, obviously in a chamber that was taken over. And to get to the chamber, they will walk past damage.
We have a crisis of cowardice in this country. But let's look at the two elements in the United States Senate, because they're two of the elements that always surround and make possible any autocratic movement. We have two types of people in there. We have the accomplices. We have the cynical elites, Holly, Cruz, Stanford, Yale, Harvard, professorships at Oxford, a clerkship to the Chief Justice of the United States. They know that the election was free, fair, and legitimate. They know that this is all a lie, but they are cynical and arrogant enough to believe that they can ride the tiger, that they can advantage themselves by going into business with the people that they have contempt for, the people outside who stormed the Capitol. And then there's the sheep, the people who just go along to get along, the accommodationists. That's what Rob Portman is, one foot in front of the other. He would be a lovely person to live next door to. He'd be a great guy for your kids to wave to. He'd be great to have an eye on the neighborhood. But he's a terrible United States senator because he doesn't understand that sometimes his job requires conflict. And the conflict that it requires is to stand up and to assert his faithfulness and fidelity to the Constitution of the United States, which was attacked. It was attacked by that mob that was incited by Holly and Cruz. There is no moving on from this. The people's government was attacked. That night, 147 of them rose. If they succeeded, if that vote had passed, what would have happened? The 244-year-old American Republic would have fallen. If they had succeeded, even at the height of Jim Crow, there was never a federal action to take away black votes, to nullify them from states that had certified a result. We're in new territory with all of this. And so there will be accountability. By the end of the month, 1,000 people will have been arrested by federal law enforcement authorities. And there will ultimately, as the facts become clear, be accountability for the political leadership of the country that also incited this. Some of them are U.S. senators. Some of them are House members, but for sure, we're not moving on as a country until there's accountability for one of the worst crimes in the history of the country.
Steve Schmidt, Jason Johnson, our thanks to two longtime friends of our broadcast. Thanks, gentlemen. Coming up for us, what's being called America's obligation in the costly mission, nothing short of saving the world from this pandemic when we come back. Interesting story.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
We're back with that story we wanted you to see. As we've mentioned, the administration trying to aggressively expand the vaccination program, announcing just today they're working to buy 200 million more doses. But the scope and scale of the vaccine shortage reaches far beyond our shores, and experts say it's on us to do more outside our borders. Our report on this tonight from NBC News correspondent Cynthia McFadden.
The world has missed the United States during the pandemic, says Dr. Larry Brilliant, a leading epidemiologist.
We are the indispensable country when it comes to global health, and the absence of our leadership has been felt at every state and in every country.
Dr. Brilliant helped eradicate smallpox.
Every major pandemic in the world in our lifetime, it was CDC that led America out of it and the rest of the world. We're on the right track to dig ourselves out of a hole that we have right now.
Now, he says, the United States has a critical role to play in helping the world access the vaccine.
Until everybody in the world is safe, no one is safe. This is a pandemic. If one country is left unvaccinated, this disease will bounce back and forth, and all of us will be constantly besieged by it.
Why should the U.S. make this a top priority when we can't solve vaccine distribution here in the U.S.?
The price of not solving the vaccine distribution problem internationally will be measured in lives.
Not just international lives, but American lives.
That's right. The economic damage will be as well.
The numbers are stunning. Canada has already pre-ordered enough vaccine to inoculate every citizen nearly six times, and the U.S. has enough purchase options to vaccinate everyone nearly five times, leaving much of the world scrambling.
Australia, Canada, and Japan have less than 1% of the coronavirus cases, but they have more doses than all of Latin America and the Caribbean, which have close to 20%.
That's where COVAX comes in, a coalition of global health players, including the World Health Organization and UNICEF. The starting goal, buy $2 billion of vaccine to inoculate 20% of the population in the world's 100 or so poorest countries, considered the greatest logistical undertaking in history.
A billion syringes?
That's right. Yeah, it is mind-boggling numbers.
Gian Gandhi says it's securing the vaccine that is the most challenging, although COVAX does have contracts for nearly 2 billion doses.
You don't have your hands on them yet.
We don't have them yet.
COVAX is also short on funding.
The COVAX initiative right now has how much money in hand?
Around $2 billion in hand.
And how much do you need to make it all happen?
Around $17 billion for everything.
Historically, the U.S. has been the biggest funder of the World Health Organization, contributing hundreds of millions of dollars.
There are a lot of people who say this is just way too expensive.
This is way too expensive for America not to get involved with. How can we not afford the billions of dollars that will save the trillions of dollars?
An expensive reality, he says, America must face. Cynthia McFadden, NBC News, New York.
An important story coming up. When a politician says, I'm just one of you, check their resume. It usually means they're not. Last thing before we go tonight, it's difficult to remember this much vitriol aimed at a single United States senator. But it's a bad time to be Josh Hawley. The men and women of the Lincoln Project, for one, will not rest until Josh Hawley is held to account for what he did. And as scheming, calculating, packaged politicians go, Hawley's close to the top, certainly first ballot Hall of Fame. This pitchfork populist, he of the fascistic fist in the air that he must have thought in the moment looked so cool and Missouri Mussolinian. Hawley is, as we've mentioned, a product of prep school, Stanford University, Yale Law School. Nothing wrong with a first-class education, like Ted Cruz, as we mentioned, Princeton, Harvard Law. What that does mean is, in most cases, these guys know better. Hawley's complaining, for instance, that he is being censored and silenced. He is making those complaints in nearly hourly Fox News national interviews. He knows better. Hawley loves being on television, but he won't love this, the latest project from the Lincoln Project.
Josh Hawley will be one of the greatest champions.
Are you trying to say that as of January 20th, that President Trump will be president?
Well, that depends on what happens on Wednesday.
And the Kansas City Star writes plainly that he has, quote, blood on his hands.
Let's have trial by combat.
Jack Danforth called Hawley's objector movement a highly destructive attack on our constitutional government. It's the opposite of conservative. It's radical.
And there you have it, the Lincoln Project to take us off the air this evening. That is our broadcast for this Tuesday night, with our thanks for being here with us. On behalf of all the men and women at the networks of NBC News, good night.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.